Welcome to another episode of the Ripple Intent Podcast. I am one of your hosts, John Grant, and with me as always is Kyle. Say hi, Kyle.
Welcome, everybody. Hey. Good to hear you. Good to see you.
So, for those of you who are new to Ripple Intent, we are a nonprofit, volunteer-based organization which is really focused on helping you be a better teammate, better partner, a better colleague at work. So we're really trying to bring a more human-centered focus to the workplace. And we're really, I always get excited with our guests. I always do, because I love this. I love these conversations that we have. And today is no different. Honestly, I just want to jump right into it. So that's what we're going to do. So I'm excited to have with us today, Nick Williams, from Absolute Caulking, but he's doing some other amazing things in the construction industry. And so, Nick, introduce yourselves for our listeners.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I'm Nick Williams. I am the director of operations for Absolute Caulking and Waterproofing, a specialty contractor here in the Denver metro area. But I do get the opportunity and privilege to serve with some of our associations in Colorado. Primarily right now, I am working as the chair of the mental health working group for the Associated General Contractors Colorado chapter.
So excited to have. I would say one of the things, you know, Nick, I've told you this before, but one of the things that's just really drawn me to you is your passion for everyone's well-being. And I think of it, what I hear from you, it is everyone. It's the anybody you come in contact with, right? So, of course, especially the people that you're working with directly or that report to you. I hear that coming from you, but it's, you know, it's heartwarming to just see someone who's so comfortably putting these things into practice. So thank you for being who you are and for joining us.
Super kind words. You're very welcome. I think, you know, you all taught me maybe something that is inside of me or ingrained as a strength, right? You guys talk a lot about the strength finders, and last year's symposium, we focused heavily on that. Well, finding out that my number one was input was no surprise, because I'm genuinely and fervently interested in figuring out as much as I possibly can about pretty much everything. And that includes and is primarily focused on people. And so getting to leverage, you know, what you all have helped me identify as a strength is certainly something that I'm so happy I get to do on a daily basis.
We're going to ask you to output some of that input.
Okay. Sounds good.
So can you tell us a little bit more about the mental health working group, how you got involved and what you all are doing?
Okay. Well, I'll start at the beginning. So I was at a seminar, and it was online. It was right in the heart of COVID, and we were talking a lot about total worker health, top to bottom, inside and out, taking care of our people, head and heart and body. And there was a statistic that came across the screen, and at first I didn't think that it could possibly be true. And what I learned was that in Colorado, in construction, we are losing folks dying by suicide at a rate 5 times higher than any safety-related cause. So I thought to myself, we're losing people off the job site 5 times faster than we are on the job site. It struck me to my core. I thought to myself immediately, as an achiever, as somebody who is a safety-minded person, we got to do something about this, John. I didn't know what other response I could possibly have other than we have to do something. So initially, started looking around the industry. There were some great people doing some really great work at the AGC. And so we got involved. There's a coalition of folks who put together a task force to try and identify what was going on. What are the causes? What are the leading indicators? What are some potential solutions? And so we put together a white paper that's currently published on the AGC's website for anybody to go ahead and peruse. And so ultimately, that's what I chose to kind of throw some of my efforts into, and got to, in that process, meet some of the most energetic, passionate, amazing individuals that are trying to do as much as they can. And together, our vision there is that we are working to save lives. And so you talked a little bit about passion earlier, John, and when it comes to life and death, and when it talks to, when we're talking about saving people and meeting people where they're at and hoping to affect positive change when it comes to that, I don't know how I could be anything other than driven and energetic, because that's really the most important thing.
I love that. And just a quick, for our listeners who don't know, AGC is Association of General Contractors. What a horrible problem. And yet I love that, you know, there are people like you who are doing something about it. How do you kind of take some of these things and then, like, what does this look like for you on a daily basis? Right. You've talked about, how do we make sure our workers go home whole, or how do we also make sure that they show up the next day, right? Like, what does this look like for you?
Before we go into that piece, let's talk a little more about this problem, because I think there's some people out there who understand what you said about the 5 times higher than any safety-related death in the industry. I think this is one of those problems that exists and so many people just don't even know it exists. So do you have some more insight into the overall industry and how suicide has become such a prevalent issue within the construction industry itself?
Yeah, Kyle. So if you want me to talk about some of the root causes, is that what I hear you saying?
Just what's the problem? Like, I'm blown away that in our industry, in the industry of construction, that suicide is such a leading cause of death. Yeah. It's like the third or fourth leading cause of death, is it not? Or is it the number one? So
people in our industry die by suicide at a rate 5 times higher than any safety-related indicator, right? And so when you think about that, you think about the amount of people that we lose per year to fall protection, struck bys, caught-ins, all of those, right? 5 times as many people are dying by suicide every single year.
And it's increased, hasn't it, for like the last 30 years? It continues to go up?
So substance use disorder, deaths by overdose, deaths by suicide have all increased year over year for a couple of decades. We have an epidemic nationally and locally. There's some really clear indicators as to why. And in construction, primarily we have men that work in the construction industry as a vast percentage, right? So men are overwhelmingly the gender in our society that actually die by suicide. So that's one of the reasons. Now, taking that statistical anomaly out of it, there's also a lot of other reasons. We're an industry that is often remote. We're an industry that is dangerous, is prone to injury, thus prone to opioid prescriptions and people having to figure out how to work through an injury to support their family. We're an industry that's seasonal, so people don't know exactly where their next paycheck is coming from. So financial instability and insecurity leads to some depressive states. We're an industry that has a lot of tough guy mentality. So there's not a lot of discussions about vulnerability and mental health and taking care of ourselves. And so the issue stems from all those leading indicators that affect many other parts of our culture, many other parts of industry, right? But we have them all centralized together in one perfect storm. And so because of all of those things, we lead all major industries in suicide rates.
And that's just the statistics available. They don't even include, I can only imagine, the number of attempts that aren't documented as part of that.
Yeah, we do have attempt data. There's really good data on the state of Colorado's Office of Suicide Prevention. They do annual reports, and they get into the metadata, and it's actually all available. So the good news for tracking is that if folks do attempt to die by suicide and do not end up doing that, that data is also tracked so that we understand who we're not losing and who is at risk. Because like you said, Kyle, thank you for alluding to that. Those people are 5 times more likely to then either make a second attempt, or the people that are near them and around them, their families, their close ones, their loved ones, are also more likely to die by suicide. So it becomes an internal epidemic inside of a family unit.
It's shocking. And like I said, I think it's one of those things that is not, the awareness level is not nearly as high as it needs to be. And the seriousness of what's happening is not nearly what it needs to be. And so thank you. Thank you for being a part of that. Thank you for sharing it. Now I'll go back to your question, John, of what are you currently involved in and what are you doing? But I'll let you restate the question, John, because you stated it so much better than I did before. I was kind of lost in some of what Nick was talking about there.
No, thank you for resetting in the conversation. That is also critical. So I think what I'd love for our listeners to hear, right, is kind of like, I'm sure there's involvement, right? We can certainly all get a little bit more involved in organizations and things like that. But I feel like at an individual level, you know, there are things that I'm sure you're doing that I'd love to hear about that are takeaways that we could all have, right? How can we start to become more aware about the people around us and what we can do about it? And I'm going to put a caveat in here, right? 3 of us are not mental health professionals, right? We are not therapists in any way, shape, or form. But I do feel like as humans, we could potentially all, right, we're all empowered to a certain extent to just be aware of what's happening with people around us. So again, I am going to throw that back to you, Nick. Like, what does some of this look like for you on a day-to-day basis with the people you work with?
I'll answer that in 3 parts, John. It's a good question, and definitely one of the most frustrating parts about hearing something as staggeringly hopeless as we're losing that many people is, how do I instill hope? How do I instill some sort of action into that? Becomes a little daunting, right? Thinking about, oh my God, what do we do something? What do we do about something that, difficult to handle? And really, it starts from the top, and that's what we preach inside of the working group and into our organizations and into our companies at AGC. So I would say, I'll say this, because we have great leadership inside of Absolute Caulking and Waterproofing, because we have great leadership at the AGC and Jeff Barrett, we have revenue, we have the budget, we have the time, the energy, and the resources to put things in place that can affect that positive change. So I'd say it starts from the top. Now, what do we do with that revenue and that budget item and that energy and those people? There's very key pointed things. At Absolute, locally, we've engaged with our partners, the professionals, like you were saying, John, engaging with the folks that do meet our individuals, our personnel, our employees at the level of the individual. We have engaged with partners at HealthLinks Colorado, They are an amazing resource center and coaching and assessment tool. So we've engaged with them. We've taken their mental health calculator and their assessment testing. It's identified weaknesses and room for growth inside of our organization. Each quarter, we're then engaging with a coach to establish protocols, systems, resources that can be put directly in the hands of our people. So I'd say finding the folks that have the good information is the second step after you've had your leadership buy-in. And then once you've been able to do that, putting that that resource in direct contact with your employee is number one priority. So if you want to talk specifically, you can talk about EAPs. You can talk about great companies like U-Turn Health that provide peer counseling, addiction counseling, intervention. You can talk about 988 is a great suicide prevention tool and crisis intervention tool that anybody can call or text. That was instilled by the state of Colorado and other states around the nation. So I hope that answered where you start and where you can potentially go, because there's so many tools out there. I will say this, a little plug for the AGC Colorado. We do have a resource list, which is very helpful on our website under the mental health tab, for places to start. That relate to grief, substance use, depression, anxiety, suicide prevention. We aim to be a one-stop shop that can help provide those resources, John, that have the professionals, that have the people that can actually intervene, help, and then get people on the road to recovery.
You mentioned 988. So that is, correct me if I'm misstating, that is the National Mental Health Hotline. Right. Yeah. So where 911 is for emergency services, which frankly, depending on the mental health situation, maybe you do need emergency services. But 988 is a relatively new resource that's come about that is right? The mental health hotline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How'd you gravitate towards this? I mean, this is in some ways, you know, people in John's generation, my generation, it wasn't talked about. You mentioned that, you know, this is a tough guy industry. The vulnerability, the sharing of your feelings, what's going on in your head, what's going on in your heart is not what you were raised to do. I mean, men were raised to be men. And so, you know, I was certainly in that, both family and society and that sort of thing. And it took a long time for me to understand that therapy and counseling were not things that people who were broken went to get fixed. So there's a lot of stigma around this stuff. And, you know, while we've tried and I continue to try, I mean, we've made some great strides as a society to bring a lot of these things out in the open. I'm curious, how did you get pulled in? Because your passion totally comes across about what you're doing and all the different things and mechanisms that you're working with. But how'd you get involved? What pulled you towards this?
Part of every published response, no matter the association or the office that's generating the information, is breaking the stigma. Kyle, it's a huge part of the problem. You're not wrong at all in that our industry is well under that a cloud of a stigma. How I got involved and why it matters so much to me is I started having, I'll answer John's question and yours by saying this: change is best and most well affected at the level of the individual. When I started having pointed, vulnerable, real, open, connected conversations with the people that I work around and I work with, and I started understanding what they were struggling with, what they were up against, not just for business reasons, right? How do I get the most out of you? How do you become a high performer? What are you dealing with at home? But for personal reasons, I genuinely care and want to know what's happening to the people that I get the opportunity to work around. When you start having those open conversations, you start to learn. And if you listen, you start to learn a lot. And what I started to feel and see and hear is that there's a lot of pain in our industry and most industries. There's a lot going on in our world right now. And people need someone to listen. And so why it became such a big deal for me is we started to, once you start to have those open conversations, you start to hear a lot more stories. And you start to hear the stories of the folks that we've lost. And you start to hear what those people's lives were like before they died by suicide. And when you start to hear those stories, you realize, wow, that sounds a lot like somebody in my organization. Or sometimes even that sounds like me. And when you really place yourself in those shoes and understand that what we're talking about is humans, individuals, people that could potentially no longer be here, it became imperative to understand why and how we could at Absolute and then as the industry at large help our folks to find the ability in themselves to be vulnerable, to have that conversation, to reach out, to find help, to find the resource. Because you're right, Kyle, it starts there. We can't put the resource in place if people can't simply even start talking about this.
So, Nick, a lot of people will be like, I don't even know how to start. Right? Like, that sounds incredibly daunting. Or, you know, how do you even, that idea of having an open, vulnerable conversation, like, how do you go there? Right? I'm thinking of those people who don't, you know, it's just that seems foreign to them, or like, whoa, that is, what does vulnerability actually even mean? I'm not comfortable going that direction. How am I supposed to even get someone else to share? So like, what does that look like for you? And I assume it's become natural over time, right? But even when you were first starting this, how do you go about it?
The training says, the data says, and then my own personal experience with this says, be extremely direct. If you see someone that's struggling, clearly struggling with depression or anxiety, or you notice some difference in behavior, or you notice that attendance has dropped, or you see evidence of maybe some substance use, be direct. What's happening in your life? Are you okay? Have you had thoughts of suicide? Are you going to hurt yourself? Are you going to die by suicide? Those direct questions, being open, honest, direct, opens the conversation up entirely. Like I said, the data says that, but I've experienced it firsthand. I've had the blessing and the opportunity to have a conversation with multiple people and ask them, are you thinking about dying by suicide? And when someone says yes to that question, there is the most vulnerability you can possibly imagine on the other end of that conversation. And typically it only ever starts with that simple direct question. Most people that are in that state just want someone to be there, to listen, to intervene, to help, to put them in touch with resources. And all it takes, John, is just a little bit of courage and vulnerability on your own part to be direct and open that question up and not be afraid of the answer.
I am married to a mental health professional, so I've got a voice in the back of my head that says, if someone were to actually state something about, right, actively considering harming themselves, then that is certainly a 911 call at that point in time, just to put that out there. But the idea of just being there and opening the door for someone to listen or to share and to be there listening, I love that part. I think that we get going fast, too fast in dealing with the tasks of the day to day, that we often just don't make time for that.
John, thank you for saying that. I'm a certified trainer for a great program called Vital Cog. It's out of the CU Depression Center at Anschutz. It's run by an amazing individual named Alex Yannicone, and she is driven, focused, and very helpful resource in the world of training our folks to be available for suicide prevention and awareness. So we've engaged our company. AGC has engaged many companies internally, and VitalCog has trained over 4,000 people last year in suicide prevention and awareness. What do you do at the other end of that conversation? How do you engage in that conversation? It's a 1 to 2 hour training, and you can train your managers on how to be responsive, how to be there, and to know how to do the right thing at the end of the conversation.
Oh, that's excellent. Can you state that resource again?
It's called VitalCog. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's AGC has a formal partnership with them. It's extremely cost effective. Sometimes it's underwritten. We did a fundraising event last year, and we have a session coming up that paid for 30 individuals to go through this training. It's integral, it's important, and it's affected change. We've heard countless stories of how people felt empowered simply by a 1 to 2 hour training to intervene and take someone's ability to survive the next day into their own hands by being there for their people. It's unbelievable to think that untrained, like you were saying, not mental health professionals, just, you know, goobers like us in the industry, capable of, you know, stepping in and helping to save some people.
Are there other things that you all are doing at Absolute? Like, how, you know, I've seen, you know, contractor meetings, right? So site meetings where, you know, we just as a team, you create space where people can have conversation so that there's an overall culture that you've got to create. Clearly, you guys are doing, you know, a lot internally with the trainings and whatnot. But like, what else can someone else do sort of on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that. There are so many great resources. I'll start with, I think, is where everyone should start. The Construction Industry Alliance for Suicide Prevention has a website, the CIASP, and you can go on their website and take the pledge. You can stand up for suicide prevention. Their acronym, STAND, stands for Safe, Training, Awareness, Normalizing, and Decreasing. So their aim is sincerely to lower the rates of suicide in construction. They have plenty of toolbox talks. If you take the pledge, they'll send you a resource box that has bracelets, hard hat stickers, training, toolbox talks, things that you can talk to your people about. It also has effective management tools. How do you open up this conversation? So I'll say that that's a great resource to start with for anybody that's interested in affecting change in their company. And then I would say to managers, to anybody who's sincerely focused on this, any of the senior level leadership executives, your people take their marching orders and their ability to communicate from you. So if we're able to, as leaders, be vulnerable, be open, be honest, talk about our own mental health issues, our own struggles, things that we've seen in the past, if we're able to open that conversation up, say at the beginning of an all hands meeting, and say, just so everybody knows, I'm struggling today, and make that an okay part of the conversation, we've seen that affect positive change in so many ways from so many leaders, because it normalizes that N and that STAND acronym. It normalizes that conversation and helps to reduce that stigma you were talking about, Kyle.
Because for so many people, it feels like such a far-reaching conversation to wade into. And from some of the resources you described, as well as the past that you described to have that conversation, it's actually... it does take some courage. It takes some training. It takes some mental preparedness, but leaning into the conversation, once you do it, you make it sound like it's so, well, simple. But I think I want to acknowledge that it does take, I mean, you've got so many different available resources to help you take that step to be able to feel confident to have that conversation with somebody.
I'll say this, Kyle, there's plenty of help out there. There's plenty of people that are passionate, knowledgeable, and can be a part of that support group that you need to start to affect that change. But ultimately, like, what we do in this industry is messy, right? Our work is messy. Intervening in people's safety preparedness, ensuring that we're saving lives from a, you know, fall protection and caught in and, you know, those types of things. But this part gets even messier. And when you're talking about intervening or helping people to, you know, recover from a substance use disorder or keep themselves alive for just one more day, and you think about like how not clean, how not, you know, black and white and policy driven that that type of approach is, when you're really talking about being there for people, it starts to become really clear. And you said it kind of seems like it might be easier than we thought. And really it is, when the focus is we're trying to save people. And so everything else just sort of falls into place if that's where your focus, your time, and your energy is. Folks can galvanize and create some pretty good momentum around a concept like that. It's pretty easy for people to get behind.
So, you know, it's, I think from what you've mentioned and what a lot of statistics show, right, the really high risk portion of the construction industries and field workers because of the means and opportunity that the dangers of a job site, right? But this applies to office workers too. I mean, we're office workers are just people just as well. So, you know, it's, you can still observe behaviors, see what's going on, have conversations, and just have those regular check-ins.
Yeah. The means and access is a huge part. Once someone has generated a plan to actually die by suicide, that means and the access is the next piece of the puzzle. And you mentioned that, and thank you, John, for bringing that up. Our industry's proliferation and fascination with firearms is another part of the puzzle. Quite often, that's the most final way that people actually do die by suicide. Yeah, the means is a huge thing. And John, Kyle, all three of us are right in the sweet spot. The highest rate of suicide in our industry is urban. So urban living, like within the metro district, middle-aged white males. That's who we're losing at the highest rate. So yeah, it's professionals, it's field workers, it's craft workers, it's support staff, it's all of our partners, it's everybody.
Wow. This is, I mean, it's certainly a serious conversation, but I do love how your passion has taken you down this path and everything that you're doing to help make a safer environment for us to all work in. So thank you for everything you're doing and for coming in and talking about it with us a little bit today so we can share with our listeners and spread the message a little further.
Honestly, I have to say thank you right back to you all. The proliferation of this message, the awareness of the statistics, and the fact that this is an epidemic that exists and that there needs to be something that's done about this, getting more people involved and the more people that hear this is absolutely one of the key focuses and key solutions that we've identified. So thank you for allowing me to take the stage a little bit and preach this message. It's not an easy one. It's not anything that anybody is particularly conveniently ready to hear, but it's, those are often the most important. So
Nick, you gave us a ton of resources as we're running down the, on time here. If someone wanted to reach out and just talk more about like how to go about this, what does it look like? How could they reach you?
Yeah, very simply. You can reach me through my LinkedIn page at Nick Williams. You can also find our email contacts on our absolute-caulking.com website. And you can visit the AGC Colorado's website, the contacts for Maddie Smith, who is the director of that culture of care that I alluded to earlier, or contacting me directly. We have a whole host of resources we can put you in touch with. You can also, if you're so inclined, the working group is open to more individuals joining our efforts. So if you'd like to join the AGC's mental health working group, you can reach out to Maddie or I directly and be a part of what we're doing.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for being here. And for our listeners, you got all those great resources. Reach out. Nick mentioned you can find him on LinkedIn. You can find Kyle and I on LinkedIn. And we encourage you to continue the conversation. If you'd like to join us in person, find out more about Ripple Intent. We get together regularly. We have an events page on our website, rippleintent.org. We have a breakfast club near you or annual symposium that you can attend. So connect with us. We look forward to it. And we will see you on the next podcast.